This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm Gaius. Germanicus is here. Our centurions, retired, are here as well, enjoying their second or third cup of wine. I've not been counting. It's a cold evening along the Thames. I told you the boatmen are sitting on their hands. It's too cold to go out there. We're looking at the 28 points delivered in these last days by the emperor's counselors. And we're reflecting on the 14 points Woodrow Wilson delivered in 1919 that led to the catastrophe of the Second War and the Cold War and the tearing up of the map in Europe, and now the tearing up of the map in Mesopotamia. So we can only guess how the map will be torn up from these 28 points. However, I come to sometimes paranoids have enemies. So when I say it's a paranoid NATO dream, I don't mean to disrespect it. It's a book. It can be titled When Russia Wins or If Russia Wins. It's a bestseller in Europe right now. It's being translated into many languages. You can go on and see it. Written by an Italian with national security background. And the scenario I'm going to give to Germanicus, he's played plenty of tabletop games. It used to be called war games. You get three moves, and there's a tendency to go nuke. But this time, we're not going to worry about that. Because the object of the game for Russia is to destroy NATO. The object of the game for NATO is to survive. Here it goes. It's 2028. Ukraine is at a stand down, ceasefire. The 28-point plan suits where Ukraine is. That's not the issue. Suddenly, over the weekend, Russian forces show up in Nerva, Estonia, a completely Russian-speaking city. And they also take an island in the middle of the river. Remember, Estonia is about 100 miles from Petersburg. It's right on top of Russia. But the Russians just sit there. They don't do anything, just like they did with Crimea in 2014. They just sit there. And NATO starts ringing each other's phones. Is this Article 5? One of us has been attacked. He's being occupied. Everybody else goes, yeah, but they're not moving. What's the problem here? It's a Russian-speaking town. They are entirely in part of the Russian media empire. It's Estonia. The Estonians are then pressed hard, and they don't invoke Article 5 either. So if it's not invoked, what do you do? Suddenly, a man who's very important to the German weapons industry, the rearmament of Germany, which is going on right now. You can see the headlines about the Bundestag did not vote for a draft, but they voted for all 18-year-olds to register for the draft. Germany's rearming now. That's the plan. A German manufacturer dies in a car crash that looks very suspicious. And there are other gray zone activities, sometimes called hybrid warfare, across the European map. They everybody keeps interpreting these things as it's just terrorism or it's just pranks. Some people interpret it otherwise. And we get to a point now where Washington says it's none of our affair, washes its hands and backs off. You guys handle it. It's your problem. Russia then has effectively ended NATO. NATO's done. There's no Article 5. There's no unanimity. Estonia is told to lump it. Next after that is the next Russian-speaking territory on the frontier. Remember, near abroad was Russian territory for several hundred years, and the Cold War gave it up without any transition moment. I know, having traveled to Azerbaijan many times over these last years, everybody over 40 is a Russian speaker. You can go almost anywhere in the Central Asian republics and find Russia dominating the leadership because they all speak the language. They were trained at Moscow University. They were Soviets. Only the young people are not. There you have it, Germanicus. That's the war game. Credible to you? And what do you do? What do you do if you're a NATO nation and we haven't invoked Article 5 and the Russians are just sitting there?
Well, you call their bluff, and you call their bluff by sending in a force and since this is several years in the future, this feisty and accelerating German rearmament should be able to deploy some forces somewhere. If they're not, then it'll be shown to be a sham.
You anticipated perfectly. I remember there's a twist here. The Bundestag meets and does not give permission for the Americans to cross German territory. That's what happened.
Yeah, but it need not be German. It could be actually a German-Polish force since they trained together. Yeah. And they just, you put a legion, you know, whatever the legion is, somewhere between a brigade and a division, up in right in front of the Russians. And you just sit there like they are.
Okay. I like it, but it's not an end game. I agree with what you're saying. You counter their move. But NATO is the question. Have they destroyed NATO?
NATO will remain a titular organization no matter what the Russians do. Now, whether or not it's an effective alliance depends on how you judge its performance. In the last 25 years, its performance has been dismal. At least in the 1990s, it was able to jointly wage war on Serbia, occupy parts of the former Yugoslavia and stay there. So it was acting like an alliance in a way, although its moves were, you know, over Kosovo, for example.
Do you think NATO's already
debatable? But the thing is, after the 9/11 war began and eventually NATO agreed to send forces to Afghanistan, and that was amazing, they did not perform well there. And NATO was actually weakened by this coerced deployment because the U.S. put pressure on NATO to expand its regional scope to Afghanistan. That's just unbelievable. So NATO is not very effective. And then when you take this war into account, NATO has managed to ruin Ukraine.
So
that's the outcome. But wait, they also trained.
Wait, I want to understand.
Army, and you trained them for a mission that no longer is relevant.
Yeah.
And they helped Ukraine be defeated in the Zaporizhian offensive of 2023. So it's not a very effective alliance, and it's kind of a laughingstock. And if you look at the German military over the last 4 or 5 years, it is a laughingstock. I don't know how Germany is going to rearm in even 10 years, let alone 3 or 4. And they're spending money, but the money isn't panning out. Because all of the European defense industries and American defense industries, more important, are following in the wake of a deindustrializing, financialized economy, which is what the West is at this point. The only nations that can build warships are Japan and Korea, because they have robust shipbuilding industries. And even they have, I mean, the Korean army may be all right. The Japanese, I have my doubts. So, you know, we're living in a dream world where we equate military power with expenditure, whereas the two are not really directly related, as we've seen by Russian performance industrially during this war. So the most that NATO can do is to do a check, you know, as in chess. It won't be a checkmate. It won't be an end game. It'll just be ongoing. And the problem with what Russia's doing is NATO could also respond, or if the U.S. wished to, by abrogating many of the terms of this potential peace agreement in the offing, the 28-point plan, and cut Russia off again and reimpose sanctions. And that would be tremendously damaging to Russia, not that they couldn't handle it, but it would put a lot of pressure on again. And I don't think Russia wants to do that. So I'm not saying that this isn't a credible war game, but it is far-fetched. And in the situation you've outlined, the best counter move is one that throws it back at the Russians and say, okay, now it's your move. You know, we're 500 yards, meters, what the hell, away from you. you know, on the at Narva. Are you going to make this a serious thing or not? You know, so I just don't think that NATO would want to risk a war. But more importantly, I don't think Russia, after finally gaining this peace agreement and being able to reconnect with the world and losing approximately three times the number of men that we did in Vietnam, I just can't imagine them wanting to throw it away with a needless confrontation. Unless, of course, it was precipitated, which is to say provoked, by the Estonians, because the Estonians and Latvians are notorious in their discrimination against Russians. You know, you have to pass a test in the national language, and if you don't, and most Russians really can't, especially the older Russians, then they get thrown out of the country. This sort of thing is potentially explosive. But I think we're a long way from the kind of attacks that Russia was mounting, like the denial of service attacks, which was a famous kind of hybrid warfare exercise in 2008. So, I mean, it's always good to play these tabletop games, but
I want to understand. I'm not pushing back. I want to understand. In this scenario, we just had a hybrid attack, so according to Donald Tusk in Poland.
Yes.
All right. So I want to understand. In 2028, with the capture of Narva and Estonia doesn't invoke Article 5, does NATO exist? Is NATO already out of existence now, so we don't have to wait to... I just want to clarify what you're saying.
NATO only existed. Let me be, you know, plain about this. NATO only really existed in the context of going to war with the Soviet Union, which would be nuclear. So...
Right. Means
well, point. You brought me up to a point where I can see this more clearly now, and that is that NATO never implemented policies or exercised itself on lesser contingencies, with the one exception of the post Yugoslavia breakup, Kosovo, etc., and that was relatively straightforward because it was in the NATO operating area, and it didn't involve Russia, of great power. But the idea of NATO being able to effectively have a set of protocols that allow it to respond to great power provocations that don't necessarily require a nuclear response, NATO is really not, and I would argue has never been prepared for that.
So NATO doesn't exist now or wouldn't exist in 28?
Well, NATO is a scenario-limited alliance. It can do certain things, and it's not able to do a full range of things. And since it operates as an alliance only in terms of peacetime exercises or in terms of defense or defense industry cooperation, or it has many meetings in Brussels, it's not an alliance that has developed the ability to respond to the kinds of provocations that exist today. It's designed for one kind of provocation, one kind of face-off with a great power, but no others. And I find NATO kind of an empty shell now. It's a consultative body, and it has militaries, but those militaries are minuscule and not capable of serious operations. And that includes all the nations in NATO. I mean, just to give you one example, maybe two, the French and the British each in the last couple of years decided to have a major show of force exercise to show that they were still to be taken seriously, a force to be reckoned with, as it were. They were going to move division-sized units to Romania. And they found they couldn't do that. They could not pull that off. They did not have the logistics, capability, and planning to make that happen. So I don't see NATO as a real alliance. What I see is security literally guaranteed by Russian forbearance. Russia doesn't want to invade NATO or fight it. And what it does want, it may soon achieve, but it is not in NATO. It's Ukraine. And so NATO's been playing a game for many, many years, ever since the fall of the Soviet Union. NATO was a real military capability to be reckoned with, and it was all ready to go toe-to-toe with the Ruskies. But those are times long ago in a galaxy far away.
So you're ruling out Russia playing the ethnic language card?
I'm not ruling it out. I don't think it will come into play unless the discrimination against Russians living in the Baltics ticks upward. And there are a lot of hotheads in Lithuania and Latvia.
All right. What's that? Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan. Yeah.
Kazakhstan has a great elite community of Russian speakers.
Oh, it does. It does. And at one point, and this may no longer be the case, it was something like 20% of the population. There was a significant percentage even in places like Uzbekistan. But Kazakhstan is in between China and Russia.
Right.
And both China and Russia have big plans for Kazakhstan, and Kazakhstan has big plans. So they don't want to screw up a good thing that they actually have a good deal right now as a linchpin of Eurasia.
So. I just want to make sure I understand right now. Your opinion is that NATO is a talk fest.
Yeah. You could see that as far back as 2008.
I accept that. But NATO.
Georgia. Yeah. So
Russia's already achieved its ambition.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't have to. The worst thing Russia could do right now is to shame and humiliate NATO. And that is one of the reasons I think that Mr. Putin has not really unleashed Russia, because the result of that, you don't corner an animal because it'll
go
crazy. So it's not a Sturm im Wasserglas, but it is close to one.
I agree with your position. It's not in the papers.
No. Well, everyone has to maintain a pretense. This is very important right now. And you know, you see this in the rhetoric that heated up recently between Japan and China with threats of cutting off heads and the like. The rhetoric is in inverse and direct proportion to the seriousness of the situation. The more heated the rhetoric, the easier you can rest it.
All right, final question. Does Ukraine accept your verdict?
About NATO?
Yeah.
Well, I think at this point they've made their peace internally with the fact that they won't be part of NATO. And it would be just an awful headache if they try it again. But the fact that Russia accepts EU membership is sufficient for Ukraine, because the thing Ukraine needs the most right now and will need for the next 50 years is to have some connection economically with a developed place that will invest in it.
Germanicus, Ukraine is going to loot. That's what they're going to do. They were the most corrupt country in Europe before the war. They're going to loot the treasury. There's not going to be a dime left in the treasury room. They're all spreading out now. They're nothing but oligarchs. And they've got their hand in the pocket of the EU, and they're going to loot it. I mean, Russia knows that. So does Ukraine.
Yeah, so that's a big win for Russia. So the best outcome for Russia would be to graciously accept all of the terms that benefit them territorially and in terms of their security needs, but also to encourage Ukraine to get closer to the EU. And this is probably the poison pill in the whole 28-point proposal, in which the U.S. is offering Europe to put up $100 billion. It's going to be, Europe's economic health is at risk here. And the Ukraine war is the worst thing that's probably happened to Europe since 1945.
What do you tell the Baltics? Relax or buy weapons?
It won't do any good anyway, because the fertility rate of these countries is so low that they're likely to disappear. I mean, the fertility is the lowest in Europe.
And the answer is there's nothing we can do for them.
Well, there's nothing we can do for them except to urge them not to do stupid things. I mean, they have... They hate Russians, and they have every reason to, given what happened with Stalin and World War II. But they also were big collaborators. I mean, they wholeheartedly joined the cause of what we should call the Nazi EU, the European project. So in World War II.
Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, all they have to do is turn around and they look at Kaliningrad, and that's their future. Is that correct?
No, I think their future's going to be fine. It's just going to be very, very small and diminishing. These are very tiny countries. They're the equivalent of states like Wyoming, for example.
So as far as they're concerned, we don't know where they're going, but they're not going to be major concerns here. Can they stand down and accept whatever happens?
Well, they're just going to keep, pretending. I mean, they all have volunteer regiments of, young people being trained in weapons, and they can do that. I mean, Latvia is reclaiming its swamps and marshes so that the Russians can advance easily. I mean, that's literally where they're going to be. I mean, they'll be fine. They don't threaten Russia, and Russia doesn't really want them.
Yes, it does.
Well, here's what Russia wants. It wants its Russians in those Baltic states to be protected, but it also does want more access to the Baltic. And one of the stupider things that NATO's doing once Sweden and Finland joined is to start threatening Russia's access to the Baltic and the larger world, the Atlantic world, by threatening to do all sorts of interruptions of Russian merchant traffic, and that is irksome to the Russians. And the real reason Stalin went into the Baltics in 1940 was he wanted bases like Ravel and Riga, so that Russia could have direct access and not be bottled up in the Gulf of Finland.
The book is either When Russia Wins or If Russia Wins. It's in translation. I've ordered it, so we'll see what other twists come in the hybrid warfare part. It's a paranoid vision, as Germanicus explicates. This is the Franz Pfister Debating Society. When we come back, we're going to pay tribute to a very intellectual king. Probably the smartest king Britain ever had, England ever had, James I, James VI of Scotland, James I of England. And you didn't know it, because we don't know it until now, having been educated in the 20th century. The true founding father is James I. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.